Welcome to Leading the Next Generation with Tim Elmore. I am your co-host, Andrew McPeak, and our mission here at Growing Leaders is to empower the emerging generations with skills to lead in real life. Today, we've got a really interesting subject, interesting because I think it's very popular. We hear people talking about it all the time. It's this subject, mental toughness.
Yeah, it is. In fact, I think I'm hearing more about it now in this year of my career than the previous 39 or 40 years.
Yeah.
Kids have always, and for that matter, adults have always had trouble not quitting or not being mentally tough, but it just seems like I hear more and more stories today.
Yeah.
I was talking with a young man in his early 20s recently, and he had been in his career for a year and a half.
Okay.
So it was 18 months. He's on his fourth job.
Four jobs
in 18 months. So
wow.
You can do the math. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying he needs to be thrown under the bus, but as I began to inquire about how come these changes, he had made the decision just to leave after a month or two when it just became harder than he thought it would be.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, welcome to life.
Yeah.
My career was harder
than I
thought.
Somebody lied to you about what life is going to be like.
That's right.
It's sort of the grass is always greener mentality.
Right.
But when I think back to my own life, and I know you could probably do the same, I think we had moments like that. Every generation
Absolutely.
Had moments like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I remember when I was growing up, my favorite sport in the world was soccer.
Yeah.
Played it all the time, YMCA, all those kinds of things. And I played all the way up through middle school and had a lot of success. I was a starter in the middle school team and all that. So I made this natural assumption, one that young man might have with his job, that high school soccer was, you know, just going to be a thing that I was going to do, you know. So I show up to try out for the high school soccer team as a freshman, and I hadn't really worked out that much over the summer because my thought was, this is just going to work out. And of course, you could probably guess what happened. I didn't make the team.
You weren't so awesome.
No, I was not so awesome. And it was like, what's going on here, you know? I thought I was awesome. So what's fascinating about that is we've all had stories where we didn't make the team or whatever. But for me, that was actually the end of my soccer career.
Interesting.
I think I had made a decision that this is obviously a statement on I'm just not a good soccer player. And so I just gave up, you know? Soccer is still one of my favorite sports, but it's something I watch, not something I play, and I think it's because of a decision that I made back then.
Yeah, well, it sounds like, I don't know if you're saying this, but it sounds like you had really a fixed mindset rather than a growth mindset.
I think that's
when
right.
When it came to soccer. Rather than, boy, I need to work harder and develop this skill set, I will go on to something else.
Yeah, yeah.
But I had my moment. I remember as a teenager starting a job that actually paid really well. In fact, the pay itself was enough to say, I'm going to stick with this for a little while. But after a couple of weeks, I thought, I don't want the money that bad because it was hard.
Yeah.
And I ended up taking another job that was much easier. When I look back, you might say, well, he just preferred this. Well, I preferred it because I didn't want to work that hard. And I wasn't really mentally tough enough to stick with it when I wasn't good yet.
Yeah. Lots of young people are giving up on things. And like we said, this has been happening to young people for a long time.
Yeah.
But it just feels like we've sort of preconditioned young people either through helping them build expectations that were that weren't right. Or maybe they just got ready because of technology. It sort of preconditioned them to a more easy lifestyle. But we would be shocked, I think, about all the people who are successful that we could look at right now, and we see them as successful, who actually went through periods like that where they had to have mental toughness.
No doubt. In fact, here's a great example, I'm thinking. Roger Federer, who we all know is this brilliant tennis player, some would argue the greatest tennis player of all time. He's got 7 Wimbledon titles. Who does that?
Yeah.
Roger actually lost in the first round at Wimbledon the first 3 years of his playing.
Fascinating.
So year 2 or 3, you know what? I'm just like you in soccer.
Yes.
If it had been me,
I would have given up.
I'm going to do ping pong, you know, or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Another one I think of, there might be some T-Swift fans out there. Taylor Swift, she was actually rejected by RCA. When she first tried to be an artist, she was 15 years old. A year and a half after that period, she was discovered in Nashville and became a huge sensation, right?
Yeah.
But if she had decided at 15 years old, when she got that rejection letter from RCA, well, this is obviously just not for me. She would never have become the person that she is today.
It's true. Probably one of my favorite coaches, certainly my favorite men's basketball coach, is Mike Krzyzewski at Duke University. he had a mediocre record of 38-37 his first three seasons.
Wow. There.
So you would think, well, this guy's not going to last. In fact, in today's culture, he actually said in today's culture, I think I wouldn't have lasted.
Yeah.
Because you got to win. It's
quickly,
all about,
right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So his ACC conference record was a dismal 13-29.
Wow.
Well, now they dominate the ACC.
Almost every year.
Yeah. So interesting, huh?
Wow. I also think of a guy named Roger Bannister.
We love talking about him.
We love him. If you go back to Roger Bannister, he actually got his start in his event in the Olympics in 1952. He came in fourth. And he said about it later that it was a devastating situation for him, but it was a failure that actually drove him to work harder and led him to be the first man to break the 4-minute mile.
Two years later. Yeah.
So one that only a record that only a few people have actually been able to accomplish.
So he obviously was at a fork in the road. He places fourth, so that means he didn't even get a medal in 1952.
Yeah.
Medal might have been a little something to hold on to. Literally.
Yes.
But instead he goes, I'm going to get faster. And yeah, he did something that people thought at the time was humanly impossible.
Amazing.
Well, I think of Lady Gaga, who's been a huge name the last decade or so. She was originally signed by Def Jam Records at age 19. The company let her go after just 3 months. They didn't see a future. Well, she did.
Yeah, they were missing something.
Yeah, that's right. So she's a waitress and so forth and so on. But she goes on and again, a dominant figure in the world of music. But again, all these are pictures of the fork in the road comes, and instead of quitting, they somehow kept going. Something happened inside of them that made them tough enough to continue.
Yes. And obviously that thing that we're talking about has to be also the thing that I guess a lot of our young people are missing when they give up too easily on some of these difficulties that they're facing.
Yeah.
You and I have talked about this, you know, for many years at this point, and I know you're chatting with people all the time, but you and I have talked specifically recently about a new term.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not super new in the world of cognitive science, but it's one that seems to be getting more and more popular that maybe can give us a little hint as to what's going on here.
Yeah. So the term is cognitive reserve. Mm. Not sure if listeners, you've heard of this term, but neuroscientists would be very familiar with it. Cognitive reserve is what needs to be built in order to have grit, in order to have mental toughness, to stick with something when the novelty is worn off.
Yeah.
So cognitive reserve is the reserve you have in your brain that enables you to have the bandwidth to go, I'm going to keep trying even though endorphins are not flowing. This is not very pleasant. My girlfriend doesn't think I'm awesome. You know, all those things that we really want. Now, here's the problem, I think. Because we live in a day where we are so, in fact, forget we. Let's talk about students for a minute.
Yes.
We're about the next generation. Students growing up today are overwhelmed with all that's coming at them. All the data, all the pop-ups, the notifications, the tests that are being given to them. And so in an overwhelmed state, we have to have cognitive reserve. And if we don't, we'll just end up quitting almost everything else that comes our way that's not mandatory.
Yeah.
And then some of the things that are mandatory. So here's my thought on cognitive reserve. In a world of being overwhelmed, I tend to push things to my subconscious level as much as I can. I want to brush my teeth every morning without even having to think about it. I don't have any brain power.
Yeah.
I want to put my shirt on. I want to eat breakfast. I want to get gas in my car. Whatever I'm doing, I want to push all the activities I can that are repetitious into subconscious. Well, that means I'm not working my brain.
Yeah.
That means it's kind of an unconscious state in many ways.
Yeah.
Well, what we need to do, what we need to build is critical thinking or cognitive reserve that allows us to have enough space up there that I got more to give here.
Mm.
When that test was hard, I'm going to stay at it. When that soccer tryout is hard, I'm coming back.
Yeah.
And so I think cognitive reserve is going to be the secret to building mental toughness in our kids today.
I love that. It's almost as if because kids don't have it when they actually get to the point where they're facing a challenge and they go, oh, man, this is going to need a little more brain power than I was planning on. I don't have that brain power to give.
Yeah.
Because I'm so overwhelmed with all this stuff going on in my life. I just don't feel like I got the energy. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Love
Andrew, you and I have talked about this before, but we live in a world, you and I both love sports. So we watch an ESPN highlight reel.
Yes.
It's the highlights of LeBron James dunking a basketball
or
Mike Trout hitting a home run or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And if all I'm watching is the highlights, I go, That's awesome. I want that too.
Yeah.
That looks easy. We don't look at all the cognitive reserve that went into practice.
Yes.
To build that into that muscle.
All the stuff they had to do.
Yeah.
Well, there are certainly, you know, each of the people that we've mentioned up to this point, we could look to them and go, what did you do? You know?
Yeah.
But what we're finding is that there are some practices that I think students can do that can help them build what is a muscle, right?
Yeah.
And so that's what we want to talk about.
Absolutely. So, Andrew, I've got 8 ideas that I want to share, and I want us to volley back and forth. But listeners, I'm hoping this is relevant and helpful to you, at least maybe 4 out of 8 that you go, I could employ that myself or with my kids.
And right before we start, I do think it's helpful to mention, in terms of mental toughness and how to build it, one other resource that we want to push people to and tell them about if they don't already know is this resource of Habitudes. We have seen over many years of working with students and utilizing images and metaphors and stories to talk about these principles is that a Habitude conversation might just be the ticket to actually developing some mental toughness. So I do want to encourage you as you're listening to these ideas, an additional resource that might be valuable to you is Habitudes. And I want to tell you specifically about Habitudes, the Art of Self-Leadership.
Yeah.
That one is particularly helping students think about how do I manage the interior parts of my life, which is exactly the kinds of exercises and mentality I'm going to need in order to build mental toughness. So if that's interesting to you, go to growingleaders.com/habitudes. You can find all about Habitudes for Self-Leadership there. That's a really great resource. So let's jump into this list.
Okay. So every one of these ideas is doable. It doesn't require money or something extra that you might not have. It just requires a decision. Okay. So idea number one, in order to build mental toughness, that cognitive reserve, one act is to wait on something you want. Mm-hmm. Wait on something you want. Our brains have incredible capacity for critical thinking and problem solving, but we get lazy due to this fast-paced, quick-click, convenient world we live in today. We're conditioned for immediate gratification and would sooner quit than wait. I mean, that's you and I both told stories in our younger years where we pick the quitting rather than the waiting.
Yeah.
Learning to wait on something we really want is like working out in a gym. It's the repetition, the waiting. It's like a mental wait that if we apply ourselves and stay in it, we just build that cognitive reserve there. Patience is like a muscle. When we're able to remain patient and stay the course until we reach a goal, neural pathways form in our brains and tell us success is possible. Okay, it's that learned industriousness we've talked about before on the podcast. Good habits form, and those pathways enable us to work and wait again for other categories of our life. So psychologists basically call this learned industriousness, as I mentioned before, and few things cultivate mental toughness like active patience, working while you wait for rewards.
I love
that. Yeah,
it makes me think years and years ago, I remember taking, a little flyer when they used to send those to your house. I don't feel like that happens quite as much.
Yeah.
But it was for the brand new video iPod. I'll still remember that. And I remember talking to my dad about it, and he was like, well, it's not near your birthday or Christmas, which are pretty close together. I'm not bitter about that at all.
Yeah, no.
But I have such a strong memory of that period of waiting, where there was, I know that that's coming in my future. But when I actually receive that thing, it is a precious, precious gift, right? Because I've built that muscle of patience. Obviously, that's a little bit of a silly example. But I think it's a great picture of exactly what I think our students are going through when they have to wait for something is it's constantly reminding them this is what life is actually like. And it's isn't so that true? Patience is such a part of life, especially in adulthood.
Absolutely. So idea number 2, talk positively to yourself. Now, I realize this idea is ages and ages old, and it's not a newsflash, but I actually think we need to enable or equip is a better word, this emerging generation to do proper self-talk. To say the right things, to not be guilty of cognitive distortions where we're exaggerating, this is the most awful day of my life or whatever, and really begin to push forward into positive self-talk. I have a friend who told me recently that he had lost 40 pounds. I didn't feel like he needed to lose 40 pounds, but he said, I needed to. I was 40 pounds overweight. I lost it. And I said, what was your secret? And you know what he said to me? It's very interesting. He said, I stopped listening to myself. I started talking to myself. That's a powerful statement.
Yeah.
If I just listen to my body, it's going to say, lie down and rest.
Yeah.
Stop work, you know, whatever. So I think now there's times we need to listen to our body. I'm a diabetic. I need to listen to my blood sugar levels.
Yeah.
But boy, is it powerful when I start saying, I can do this. I will stick with this.
Yeah.
So it's just a brilliant piece of advice to talk to yourself, not just listen to yourself. Too often we grow lazy or weary. Because we listen to our accidental self-talk. And by the way, we are self-talking all the time.
Yes, we are.
Sometimes it's accidental.
Yep.
We have this perhaps a lazy disposition, and we start believing what we're saying. Positivity is one of the greatest feeders of mental toughness. At least I believe so. There are many times I finished a project because I continued telling myself I could do it when no one else was saying that. Positive self-talk is one of my most important allies. To develop and maintain the kind of mental toughness success requires, it's crucial to keep your thoughts and self-talk positive and avoid habits that lead to negativity and unhealthy behavior, writes Lolly Doskal, president of the Lead From Within group. I just think that's so, so good. So I guess what I'm saying here is, what are you saying? What are you saying? What are you saying?
That's good.
Not just what are you listening to. It's going to help you move forward.
One of the things that's really popular, and you mentioned cognitive distortions. One of those cognitive distortions is this concept of catastrophizing.
Yeah.
And right. One of the things that I see in my friends in their 30s and 20s is that this is very, very prevalent. We've got a whole generation of young adults who don't have the ability to tell themselves, that thought that just came into my mind isn't true. You know?
Yeah.
And that's really what this is all about.
That really is.
If you could prep your students at 12 and 13 years old to start saying, you know what, I have the ability to tell myself what's true rather than just, you know, whatever thought comes into my mind, I have to be captivated by that for the next 24 hours or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that is such an important life skill, one that's really going to help you when you're dealing with a whole lot of things. So.
No doubt. All right. Idea number three, persist on a project when it's hard. Now, this is obviously a second cousin to number one, keep going when it's hard. But this is where you're working on a project or your student is working on a project. It becomes hard and you say, because it's hard, I'm going to really push myself to keep going. This is something I talked to my kids about when they were growing up. We embrace this definition for discipline. Discipline is doing what you need to do even when you don't feel like it.
Yeah.
Doing what you need to do even when you don't feel like it. We'd say that out loud. This is huge, and all four of us in our family would choose a project, often weekly, that we didn't like, and we'd do it. It might be sweeping out the garage for me, which I did not like doing. It might be Bethany cleaning up her room or Jonathan putting his toys away in the den. But whatever it was, we'd all choose something just to do the reps on that particular category. And then we discuss it later for accountability's sake. How'd we do? Did we quit? Did we keep doing it every day? Whether it was cleaning the garage or taking out the trash or whatever, you name it, we all chose something that wasn't glitzy, wasn't sexy, and we went after it on purpose. There's something about pushing my lazy body to do the opposite of what it wants that helps me lead myself. And that Habitudes course is all about self-leadership.
Yeah.
I would just say on this idea, choose something and then help your student choose something that it's going to require mental toughness. They want to give up. And I just think there's few activities that make us tougher than intentionally doing hard things.
So true. The reward is greater when the work was harder is what I've found with so many things in my life. And it's so fascinating when you walk in somebody's office and they have their diploma up on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Their diploma's on the wall not so you get really excited about it. The diploma's on the wall because they're the ones who know very personally how much work they put into it. You know, I feel the same way when we get to hold a book we've been working on for more than a year.
Yeah, like, that's right.
That took so much work.
Yeah.
And I hope that people enjoy it out in the world, but at the same time, I'm just really glad that I stuck it through and got this thing done. And I think that's so true with students. And that suggestion that you made for your family is one that we make to students all the time when we're teaching them about habitudes and personal discipline and all of that. When you walk in the garage and it is well swept, you feel a certain pride that's really a feeling you can't get in any other way.
No, there isn't. And the chemicals that are flowing in our bodies when we see that result are just marvelous. I think they're just natural, God-given chemicals that we need flowing, and they won't flow by just words of affirmation.
Yep.
It's by achievement in our life. Yeah. When you mentioned the college diploma, I thought about this. I have a shirt that says, college, the best 7 years of my life.
As long as it had a beginning.
Yeah,
and
that,
an
that's
end,
right.
That's
it's
you,
okay.
That's all
that's
you
right.
need to know.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I
all right.
That.
Number four, memorize important information. Now, thanks to Google, Wikipedia, and smartphones, we don't need to recall information that we once memorized. You and I both remember a day where we had to memorize more than we do today, Andrew.
Yes.
I really do. Phone numbers, quick facts, we can all just look them up. Mm-hmm. So we stop. That muscle doesn't develop. That cognitive reserve is not in that filing cabinet, is not being grown because of this. We now possess what I call a Google reflex, where our memories once resided. And yet, while this is true, it has affected our brains. Studies show that we don't retain information we once did because we subconsciously know it's stored on a device. Further, thanks to the ongoing stimulation from our portable devices, we're more apt to remember entertainment facts than facts that actually benefit us. You know this many times, the man on the street interviews take place, and who's your congressman? I have no idea. Who has the number one pop song? Oh, I know that one.
Yeah.
It's like, who cares about that? But we do.
Why is that the information in our brains?
Yeah, exactly. That's so true. So what if we conditioned our brain to memorize some important information, even if we could look it up, for the sake of building mental toughness? Mm. Like the restaurant waiter who deliberately hears your order and without writing it down. We've all marveled at that.
Yeah.
And then executes it with the chefs. We can deepen our mental abilities by committing data to memory and regurgitating it later to someone. Memories work like muscles, just like patience does. We use them or we lose them. And I feel like I talk to teachers that go, I just don't think memories in students right now are strong. Well, no, they're not because we didn't ask them to use them.
And it's worth saying we'd be the first ones. You and I talk all the time about the school system being built on lecture, drill, memorization, test is not the most effective methodology. We're big into experiential learning and all those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, I actually think you're spot on with this. Because of what's going on in the world today with our technology and social media and Google and all those things, our memories are on the decline. There's tons of studies. One book I read on it that totally blew my mind was called The Shallows. I think you read that as well, about how our brains have been rewired growing up, or living in the age of the internet.
Yeah.
And I think you're exactly right. When we take time to memorize things, for me, it's names and faces.
Mm-hmm.
That is like just a challenge for me because I grew up in a social media world where I can always just look somebody up later. But I just think it's such an important thing to say, I'm going to choose some things in my life and go, for that thing, I actually want to memorize stuff because I think it's a good stretch for my brain to actually get that. So I love this suggestion.
Yeah, good. Number five, read a long book. Now, we much prefer today short books, it seems like.
Or long movies.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Yeah. But reading a long book, the digital world has changed our reading habits. It has. In many ways, it's made us lazy. We now consume more information per week than we did two generations ago. But in shorter spurts and usually on screens, often websites instead of books. So we're often conditioned to read 140 characters at a time on that tweet we just read. We feel like we understand something when we've digested a soundbite.
Yeah.
And you and I both know that can't be true.
Yeah.
And then we move on to the next thing. So teens' attention spans have shortened from 12 seconds in the year 2000 to 8 seconds today. Adolescents are reading fewer books for fun than they did 30 years ago, according to Dr. Gene Twenge. Why would they with access to on-demand shows on Netflix or YouTube? So reading at least 30 minutes a day over a period of several weeks increases our mental toughness. In fact, if you read 30 minutes a day, you can get through 2 or 3 books a year, depending on how big the book was.
Yeah.
But that's really good. Most people say, I'd never read that much. Well, just go 30 minutes a day. Forget the pages. Just read 30 minutes a day.
Yeah.
And I just believe that just cultivates our grit.
Some of the best gifts I have been given, or I was given as a kid, were books, right?
Yeah.
And I think that maybe that's one thing we need to do is find a book that you just absolutely fell in love with when you were a teenager or you were a child and give that as a gift, because I think one of the reasons this isn't happening is kids are not falling in love with books enough to actually commit to reading these things. I have a young niece who absolutely loves books, and she's reading all the time. And I think a big reason for that is she was taught to love those books by her parents, And I just think that's not happening enough. We need to give kids an opportunity to fall in love with this ancient technology called the book.
Yeah, I used to pay my kids to read books.
Oh, really?
They'd have to read them and actually talk to me about what they read or write a little paper. But if, you know, they were incentivized by money, I paid them to take out the trash. Why not read a book?
Yeah.
So, all right. Number six, practice mindfulness daily.
Mm.
Now, this is one that sometimes gets a little controversial because people want to, are you asking them to join some far Eastern spiritual experience? No.
Nothing like that.
Although they can.
Yeah.
But this is more about really taking control of your thoughts. That's what mindfulness is. Mindfulness is a way to recover control of our thoughts. And many adolescents display little mental discipline because they're merely reacting to external stimuli from a portable device all day. You're playing defense, not offense. I believe, well, just think about this. Andrew, think about this. We unlock our phones about 80 times a day.
Huh.
That's ridiculous. In fact, that makes me tired just thinking about unlocking my phone.
Yeah.
Just 80 times a day.
I can't think of anything else I do 80 times a day.
Exactly. So mindfulness, in contrast, is the art of brief meditation. It enables our minds to focus for a few minutes to quiet our thoughts, to calm our emotions, and to guide our thought processes away from all the noise and the clutter around us. In fact, sometimes instead of emptying my mind, I might fill my mind with a single thought. So there's always to practice this that fit your worldview, listener.
Yeah.
But I'm saying mindfulness is the controlling of your mind, so you're not at the mercy of wherever your mind wants to drift on any given day.
I love that. I think one of the ways this has been really helpful for me is as I take more breaks in my day and kind of go, okay, what am I just going to focus on? I'm going to put away even practices like when I get home, leaving my phone in another room and just different things that can help me kind of do singular focused activities. Here's what I've noticed. I have increased self-awareness. I know when something's going on in my body or I feel tired today or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm able to achieve that recognition and that self-awareness because I've got enough margin to actually be aware, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
And I just, I look back on where I was maybe 4 or 5 years ago and think that I was not as aware of my own self as I am today.
I think that's an illustration of cognitive reserve. Mm. You have the reserve to be aware when you maybe didn't when you were running and gunning all the time. So
true.
Good. All right, two more. Number seven, pay attention to a program long past its engagement value. So we all know how to watch a Netflix show when it's really funny or it's really engaging. It's a thriller, whatever. And when you're paying attention because it's so engaging, you're really not working hard. In fact, it's quite the opposite. You're being stimulated by some external source, and you're just enjoying the ride. Mm. You're being pulled by someone else. When you go, this program is no longer funny or fun, I'm going to stay with it, you're building some cognitive reserve there. So let me just kind of summarize this and then maybe give you a practical application. And Andrew, you may want to throw one in yourself. So this step is a second cousin to numbers 3 and 5 that we gave you earlier. But it cultivates mental toughness in a different way because it enables us to conquer boredom. Mm. We consider boredom an enemy today. When I say we, not you and me necessarily, but kids. When I was a kid, I hated boredom.
Yeah.
But actually, boredom is necessary.
Yes.
Our brains need boredom to develop some of the skill sets that we need to be a good adult, to be a good leader. So I actually think doing this, staying with a program long after I'm no longer interested or I'm no longer engaged with it is a huge, huge, huge thing. When we force ourselves to continue paying attention to a program, our minds must work to find stimulation when it's difficult to find.
Hmm.
You follow that? You're finding treasure when it wasn't visible. You're doing an Easter egg hunt and the eggs are really hidden, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So finishing a lengthy project or program when we would rather quit liberates us. Get this. It liberates us from the tyranny of our need for someone else to help us persevere.
Hmm.
Yeah. It relieves us from our addiction to stimulation. And the faster we quit a commitment, the easier it is to quit again. The more we stick with a program, the more we build up that muscle that says, I can stick with it. And by the way, aren't all of us going to have to do something, whether we're practicing football, studying for a science class, or doing the job we have? It's not glitzy certain hours of the day.
Yes.
And we have to persist. So the longer we persevere in a commitment, the easier it is to stay committed in the future.
I love that. So would you say that it's more valuable to to commit to whatever it is you're doing than to try a whole bunch of things. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, well, I think different parts of your brain are exercised. There's something to trying new things that gives me that, ooh, I got to adapt quickly. That's good.
Yeah.
But a different muscles develop when I say I'm sticking with this. Illustration. So because I know this to be true, I'm doing this at home right now, late at night.
Okay.
My wife wants to watch Downton Abbey.
Uh-huh.
I call it Downtown Arby's. But it's actually a good show, for sure. But yes. So please don't email me.
Many people are in love with
that's
it.
That's right, absolutely. But she watched. I have to watch many episodes where I go, I don't care anymore about that little argument they had in the dining room. You know, that sort of thing.
For some reason has blown up into a whole thing. Yeah.
That's right. Drama, but no drama.
Yeah.
But what I'm doing is I'm staying with this. I'm staying with this. I want to know what Mr. Bates does now and why how's he going to get out of this? Only because I know it's good for me to stick with something.
That's a good example.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And now we all know.
I may get sued for that.
Yes.
Okay. Number 8, the last one. Build a moral compass and set standards inside of you.
Hmm.
Now, you might be wondering, how in the world does that have to do with mental toughness? Mm-hmm. Oh, I think it has everything to do with it. Let me explain. Andrew, people get derailed in their pursuit of excellence, I think, by compromising their beliefs.
Yeah.
They've got this standard and they don't meet it.
Yeah.
When the going gets tough, they begin to buy into the idea that they can fudge on a standard or surrender a moral value that they hold to be true, or at least they say they hold to be true. One of the clearest paths to building mental toughness is the accountability that comes from a personal ethic or belief that will not let you surrender.
Mm.
You and I have both met deadlines that we said, we got to do this. People are counting on me to do this. So it holds you to performing your best at your best self. That's what I'm saying, really. In other words, I grow mentally tough when I embrace a standard that's transcendent of me.
Yeah.
And it acts like a plumb line. To keep me performing excellently. You know, that plumb line idea where we hang out the thing up next to a crooked wall and we can tell it's a crooked wall. So years ago, I exchanged New Year's resolutions for New Year's standards.
I like that.
And what I meant by that is a resolution might be, I'm going to lose 40 pounds. Well, then when I lose it...
what do I do after that?
Yeah, what do I do after that? But a standard is a way of living. I'm going to be an excellent husband, and here's what that means. Or I'm going to be... So I really think this is a standard that builds mental toughness because I go, this is who I am. Not this down here, this up here. It's just huge. And they become a bar for you then to meet. Yeah.
It reminds me of one of our habitudes, right? One that we've probably talked about in the podcast before, but thermostats and thermometers, right?
Yeah,
The concept of a thermostat is I do two things really well. Like a thermostat, if I'm going to lead others, if I'm going to lead myself well, I have to first of all know what the temperature needs to be at. We call that knowing your values, right? Or setting your values. And that's exactly what you're talking about. If your values aren't set, then you don't know what actions need to be taken when you enter into a new situation, right? If I say, this is the kind of person I'm always going to be, and then I walk into a room and the standard is lower than my own personal standard, then I'm going to know I've got to live above the standard expectations of everyone else.
Yeah.
And this is really difficult, especially for young people, because if you say, I'm going to be this kind of person, and then you walk in a room with all the cool kids, and they're a very, you know, a sub of what you've said, this is the kind of person I want to be, then you know something's not right. And it's only the person who has that set standard of values that says, I'm going to have I have this internal toughness that's going to keep me going in the face of that. So I love that. I think that's spot on.
Well, and isn't it refreshing when you hear about a young person, especially, that's got that, that's done that in their life?
Oh, yeah.
I'm thinking right now, Andrew, and maybe we can even close with this, of that great story that I heard first back in 2012, and then I reheard her story along the way. But Dawn Loggins was a high school student in North Carolina. She was coming really from an at-risk home. Both of her parents were, I think, drug addicts, and she lived in a trailer home, and it just was less than optimal. One day she comes home. Her parents have left her. They've just abandoned her.
Wow.
So she now is a teenager without parents and no game plan really to what am I going to eat? Where am, you know, what do I do? So what I love about Dawn's story is she was a teenager that had some mental toughness. She said, it's more important for me to finish what I've started than to just quit like my mom and dad did.
Yeah.
So she gets a job at the very high school she's attending as a custodian.
Wow. Wow.
So she's there earlier and later, before and after school, mopping floors and picking up trash and so forth. The other students, if they get there early, see their classmate cleaning things up, wearing this bib and so forth. Well, the head custodian, or one of the head custodians, actually took Dawn under her wing and said, you can live with me. And so she's this homeless girl that now has a place to stay. But she, in all of her discretionary time, she's studying because she didn't get to do it after school. She's working. And she does so well in school, she gets an invite to Harvard University.
Wow.
She's one of the homeless to Harvard stories that we've heard over the last decade. Well, fast forward, we hear about her later. She's at Harvard. She's thriving. So she's not a fluke. This is a thriving young lady, not just because she's smart. Harvard's full of a lot of smart kids.
Yes, it is.
She's thriving because of her mental toughness.
Couldn't agree more.
And this is the story we want to tell over and over and over in the young leaders that we're building, and I'm hoping, listeners, in the young people around you that you're building today.
Absolutely. That's so good. The young people you're leading are eventually going to get to a point where talent is kind of ubiquitous, right? Everybody's got talent.
Yeah.
They're in that moment, they're going to, the thing that's going to set them apart is their mental toughness.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that. Well, Tim, thanks so much for leading us through this conversation. I hope this has been helpful for you. We mentioned it earlier, but if you're looking for a resource on top of some of these exercises that you could utilize to have conversations about mental toughness, Habitudes, the Art of Self-Leadership is a great course. You can get it on Habitudes online or in a book form. And actually, one of the Habitudes in that course is thermostats and thermometers, one of the Habitudes that we talked about. So that's a really great picture of how what it takes really to live by a certain set of values. So again, if you're interested in that, go to growingleaders.com/habitudes and you can find out more about it there. As always, if you would help us out by rating this podcast, that helps us out a lot. Kind of gets the word out about what we're doing here. Follow us online. We love connecting with you there. So Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, you can find @growingleaders and @TimElmore there. And then lastly, if you've got ideas for this podcast, people you want us to interview, subjects that you think are interesting and you'd love for us to talk about, shoot us an email, podcast@growingleaders.com. We love getting those and hearing from you. Tim, thanks for leading us through this conversation.
My pleasure.
Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you next time.